We're going to be having a public hearing today on House Bill 5031. It is my hope that I'm calling all Senate members to the committee and so that we can get started. We have a long road ahead of us with a lot of good information on the state hospital. So what I'd like to do, though, is to have John to bring us up to date on this, and Mr. Britton, excuse me, and give whatever information out that you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I have a number of things to hand out to you, and I want to first start by calling your attention to what is already at your places. It was some written testimony submitted from Kimberly Lindsay, the Executive Director of Mara Wheeler Behavioral Health, at last Wednesday's meeting when we had public testimony. So that is at your places already. Second thing that I need to have handed out is some further information that should go into your budget books, Volume 4 on the mental health budget. These are materials on the Capitol construction and on the Oregon State Hospital, but they need to be put in your Volume 4 books. If you wish, you can read them today as well. I'll have Eric hand those out. I have four other things to hand out in just a second. And I want to go over them with you for just a moment.
There's some issues there.
The first thing that Eric is going to be handing out to you right now is a description in the DHS budget books of the State Hospital Master Plan Facility and Data Systems Replacement. It's a description of about 10 pages or so, 8 pages. And I'd like you, if you would please, to flip to what's labeled as page 35. In that packet, and also page 36. On page 35, what this description shows is the pieces of the Oregon State Hospital replacement facility project in different places within the Department of Human Services. So at the top, the total funds budget of $3,172,416, 20 positions, 18.62 FTE, is in the Administrative Services Division. The second block there, the Health Services Fiscal Impact, is a policy option package that we touched on one day last week, and there were questions from Senator Bates and Representative Nathanson about that, and I answered incorrectly. This is about $545,893, 3 positions, 2.67 FTE. These are persons within the mental health division who will be working on the state hospital facilities replacement project. So that's 3 positions, 2.67 FTE. The piece above it, the Administrative Services Division, as I understand it, would primarily be working on that information systems and data replacement project that is related to the Oregon State Hospital. If you flip over to page 36, you'll see in the capital construction fiscal impact other funds of $81,584,275. This is not in House Bill 5031. It is in a different bill, and I want to explain that to you for just a moment. But this is the lion's share of what, at the time the governor's budget was put together, was thought to be the 2007-09 biennial cost for starting this project in earnest, purchasing of land and initial construction. That number has changed, and I'll get to that in just a moment. All right. The next thing that, Eric, if you wouldn't mind handing this out, our capital construction estimates for the Oregon State Hospital. At the far left, you see the category of expense here, professional services, construction costs, property purchase, and so on down the line. The governor's recommended budget was $81 million, that's the number you just saw a moment ago, $584,275. However, since the governor's budget was put together, two sites have been selected. That's what the department will be talking to you about today in today's hearing. And the new estimate for the 07-09 costs for this project are now $40,676,275. So they have dropped appreciably, primarily because the sites that have been selected are already owned by the state of Oregon. So you can see, third line down, the governor's budget had 64 plus million for property purchase. That's now down to about $722,000. Now, some other costs have gone up. The line below that, unique costs in terms of preparing the site, they've included about $20 million, where in the governor's budget there was zero. So you need to understand that there have been some changes made, and again, the department can address questions about some of those changes. The next handout is a copy of House Bill 5006. This is known as the Capital Construction Bill, and it conforms to what was in the governor's recommended budget. If you flip over to page 2 of that bill, about the middle of the page on line 25, again you see the number $81,584,275. This is again a six-year expenditure limitation. We don't know what subcommittee within Ways and Means will be hearing this bill and voting on it. Eventually it will need to pass through full Ways and Means, but for now you need to be aware that this is where the expenditure limitation is granted to the Department of Human Services. It's in the Capital Construction Bill. It is not in the DHS budget bill, which is 5031. Just wanted to let you all know that. The last handout that I have for you is a copy of House Bill 5005. It is known amongst the budget folks as the bond bill. And again, it comports with the governor's recommended budget. It lists all kinds of ceilings or caps on the amount of debt that can be issued for the 07-09 biennium. If you flip to the second page and look at line 21, you'll see certificates of participation and other financing agreements, Oregon Department of Administrative Services. $519,115,000 is the cap on COP, or certificates of participation. That's the limit for the 07-09 biennium. So within that $519 million, is what would be needed as far as COP financing for the state hospital. But again, this is known as the bond bill, and this subcommittee or another subcommittee of Ways and Means may be dealing with this particular bill later in the session, but certainly before the session is over. So I wanted you to give that, to have that understanding in the way of background for today's discussion.
Any questions?
I'm only just looking right now. Yes, Senator Morissette.
Thank you. The previous statement about the savings from $64 million to $40 million on the sites that are based on the fact that the state already owns the sites, that doesn't include the site in Junction City, does it, or does it?
My understanding, Senator Morissette, is that the state does own that site near Junction City.
May I follow through? That's probably because it was purchased as a correction site. So why is there still a big $40 million fiscal on sites we already own? Is that the construction of the facilities and everything?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, the department will get into that more, but we're going back to this page. There are clearly some differences, and again, the biggest is the property purchase cost has gone down almost to nothing, but this is site and unique costs associated with that site have gone up from nothing in the governor's budget to $20 million. Now, that may be a contingency. That's an estimate of what it may take. It might cost less. It might cost more than that. We're not sure.
Okay, but just for further clarification, so we're not talking purchase price of the sites because the state already owns both sites?
That's my understanding,
Senator. So we're talking contingency costs that may go along with it, but that does not include building costs.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, not so much it looks like in 2007-09, but as you head out, if you go down this page to the far right, we're looking at construction costs of about $274 million. Total costs of about, on this page anyway, about $451 million.
May I ask for some further information in writing at some point? Could you tell me what that $40 million...
41. Senator, actually, as soon as I get Dr. Goldberg up here, who is intimately familiar with these numbers, then he can answer any of the questions that you might have.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, the point I wanted to make was that in the capital construction budget bill, that limitation of $81 million will most definitely come down to whatever the department believes is appropriate.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Dr. Goldberg, join us.
With Mr. Nickel?
You may.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, for the record, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services.
Bob Nickel, Assistant Director and responsible for Addictions and Mental Health Division.
Do you all have one of these in front of you? My task today is to go through this in 5 minutes.
Good.
And I'm going to try and do that at a high level. Because let me.
I'm sorry.
This is a budget here, but really, this is as much about people as it is about budgets. This is really what we're going to spend the next bit talking about, is about the opportunity in this state to create a new mental health system. And our ability to do that, both in terms of being able to develop the services on the front end to keep people out of a state hospital, what we need in terms of prevention, early intervention, and treatment of mental illness in communities is absolutely critical. What we need on the back end in terms of services with which to discharge people when they leave the hospital are critical. But the piece we're going to talk about today is in the middle. We're going to focus on the hospital piece, which is another critical piece of our state mental health system. But it's always important when we begin that conversation to talk about this as an entire system. And it's critical that if we're going to create that new system, one that provides the highest quality care to our citizens with mental illness within their communities, that we've got to understand that it's all those pieces fit together, and that we've got to adequately build and develop each of those pieces. Having said that, today we're going to focus on the state hospital, because before you is a policy option package and a budget to consider about the construction of new facilities. We began a process several years ago where it became apparent that the current state hospital was inadequate to meet the programmatic needs to serve our clients, and that it was outdated, old, that there are areas of it which were closed and unsafe, and that we needed to modernize a facility that was built over 100 years ago and that hadn't been added to since the 1950s. We hired a consultant firm known nationally for their building of state hospitals, their evaluation of state psychiatric facilities. They evaluated our hospital and came to the conclusion that it was inadequate and that it wasn't amenable to refurbishing, that we needed to build a new facility. And that's in that report, is in your binder. That's the phase one, what we've referred to as the phase one master plan report. Subsequent to that, there was a second master plan, phase two of the master plan report, which said if our facility needs to be rebuilt, what do we need to build? And as a part of that discussion, we looked at what the state's needs were in terms of mental health care delivery on the front end, what was needed in terms of community development, what was needed in terms of bed capacity out into the future, out into the ends of 2020 and out into 2030, and what was needed on the back end to be able to provide the appropriate placements for individuals with mental illness. That report came to a conclusion looking at all of those issues: population growth, demographics, our state mental health system, what's needed on the front end, what's needed on the back end, and made recommendations that we needed a 620-bed facility in the northeastern part of the state, on the west side of the Cascades, a 360-bed facility south of Linn County, and at least, at a minimum, 216-bed facilities out on the eastern side in eastern and central Oregon. Following that report, then Speaker Menas and President Courtney and the governor got together and put together a process by which we developed criteria to site the two large facilities, not the 16-bed facilities on the eastern side of the Cascades. That actually has a separate process, and we have a separate process developing the mental health needs and the facility needs in eastern and central Oregon. We have a process looking at the front-end community service needs that you'll hear about at another session. But this process was to look at the criteria around which we would consider where to site these two facilities. A joint legislative committee was put together, members of the House and members of the Senate, each appointed by respective leadership. Senator Gordley was a member of that committee. We met over the course of about 3 months. We took public testimony, and we developed a set of criteria upon which to look at where to site these two facilities. Following that, the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Human Services got together and solicited land. And I'm going through this at a very high level. All of that is actually an entire report of that is in the first 20 pages of what you have before you. But we put together a series of criteria, both technical criteria, the land needed to be an adequate size to upon which to build the facilities, not building in a floodplain, the kinds of technical things that you would consider in choosing a plot of land, as well as the programmatic factors, being near the needs of our patients and our communities, being able to recruit and retain an adequate workforce, and I'll get into that in a moment. And based on those criteria, we solicited land. We had 13 properties that met the cut and which were evaluated. And if you look at page 13 of 24, you'll see those sites and they're ranked based on those criteria. And then what you'll see in the pages that follow is an explanation of the rationale behind choosing what was as a first choice for the site in the north, building on the current state hospital campus, and as the choice for the site south of Linn County, a 360-bed facility in Junction City. The site evaluations, the ranking, the scoring is all there, and you know we certainly welcome any look at that. In the end, the decision came down to a couple of large issues that needed to be considered in looking at this. Number one was being certain that we could locate facilities near the vast majority of our patients and their families. And if you turn to tab, I believe it's tab 8, the very, very back, there's a map. Looks like this. And actually, My message probably is easily delivered if you just can look here as well. This really looks at the geographic areas that the patients in our current state hospital come from. This is 2006 data from all of the patients in the hospital over 2006 and the zip codes in which they came from. And what you can see is that 68% of the patients come from primarily Salem and Portland.
Madam Chair, I kind of lost. Whereabouts? What page are you on here?
It's tab 8, the very, very, very back. There's a... Okay.
We lost you there.
Okay, no good. You got to have the map to know where you're going.
We actually are paying attention.
That's good. I'm also beyond my 5 minutes, but I'm going to try and map it up quick.
Go on.
68, this is a map of where our patients came from in 2006. 68% of our patients came from the counties in the northeastern part of the state, with the vast majority coming from Salem and Portland area. The next place where the most of our patients came from was actually from the Eugene area, from Lane County. And that if you look at Lane, Deschutes, and Crook, but the majority of those patients are from Lane County is another 14%. And then 15% of our patients came from those counties in the south, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine, Coos, etc. So locating two facilities near the majority of our patients was key. Recruiting and retaining staff is a huge issue. As we face critical workforce shortages in this state, currently, not just in the middle, health field, but in nursing shortages in many of our acute care hospitals, our ability to recruit and retain adequate nursing and psychiatric staff is critical. So needing to locate facilities in areas that give us the greatest chance to do that was key. Certainly Salem, where we had a workforce and are able to retain a workforce, and the site in Junction City presented us with an opportunity to partner with the universities that were there, Oregon State, University of Oregon, as well as Oregon Health Sciences University, which will be building a new campus down in the Eugene area, and to be able to partner with them was critical. And then the last piece, and Senator Morissette alluded to it, was cost and value.
Excuse me, just a minute, Doctor.
Can I ask a question again, please, Madam Chair? Can you give us the zip code numbers for the Tri-County area and break us down a little tighter for us in a later time?
Yeah, if you actually, it's there on the back of that map. If you look at the back of the map, we have county by county percentages of patients.
Thank you, Mr. And thank you, Dr. Goldberg.
My pleasure.
Senator Morissette, do you have a question?
No.
Okay, continue, Dr. Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Morgan?
On the back of that map, the spreadsheet that has the counties, what is Group 1, Group 2, and Group 3?
I'm going to say you got some help, right?
Yeah, I hope I have help back there.
You do.
From Carol? I believe those were some groupings that we put together. I think Group 2 is... Group 2 coincides with the Lane, Deschutes, and Crook. I believe it's a grouping that we have put together for administrative reasons.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Karen Brazil, Oregon State Hospital Replacement Specialist. And yes, we probably should have taken that off of the chart. We did put it together as we were going through and ranking the sites and looking at dividing the state up into thirds, and then later it became apparent that we should really try to section off Eastern Oregon because of their unique needs, and that neither of these facilities is very close to them. And so we do have another work group that Mr. Nickel can speak to about the needs of Eastern Oregon. So I apologize that it's even there.
Group 2 is Lane, Deschutes, and Crook. Group 3 is the 14.9% from the southern Oregon counties. And Group 1 is really everything else.
But since she's going to take them off, we're going to trouble ourselves about it. Senator Bates.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure my figures are correct. If I'm reading this correctly, the Tri-County area is 45% of the patients coming in. The Tri-County area is 45%. Mm-hmm. And then these other counties you've listed in that first top category could just as easily, the families could go to Eugene as easily go to Portland. And frankly, since I go both directions all the time, I really go to Eugene from here than I go to Portland. Mm-hmm. Between traffic and other difficulties. I have a real hard time understanding why Portland was bypassed in place of Salem. We have a letter from Richard Knight, from Noah Knight Richardson, a psychiatrist, who's an excellent psychiatrist under the trust. He feels that the Salem choice was marginal at best. Most of these people are coming from the Tri-County area. The psychiatrists and treatment people are there. You've got OHSU there. You've got major hospitals there. Most of the people coming from there. Southern Oregon was eliminated from this because of those reasons, and I think rightfully so. I support the Eugene site as an excellent site for Southern Oregon and Central Oregon. I don't quite follow the logic that went on here. And when I look at the makeup of the committee, I have serious reservations.
Chair Carter, Senator Bates, we considered land in Portland, and if you look, you'll see that there were four sites for the north that met the criteria, two that were in Salem and two that were in Portland. The sites in Portland, it's not the location of Portland. For that reason, I think what you've set out is a great rationale. The issue was the the land available in Portland had some serious issues, which were several. Number one, costs. Number two, community support. And number three, zoning. And had there been a... We looked at 13 sites, all of which had advantages and disadvantages. And I believe what you've done is very, very well articulated a rationale for a location, which is Portland, which I share. The issue was being able to find land that met the criteria, that we could build on, that was zoned appropriately.
Allow me to say this. I worked with a group in Portland. We are out of industrial land sites in Portland. As a matter of fact, Portland is in a position now where it's having to maybe look to our friends to the north, as well as some of our friends to the west, to see what we can do in terms of industrial land in the Portland area. And there is no place in Portland proper that a site, the needs of this kind of siting would have qualified that. I should tell you that I was on a committee for looking at industrial land sites in Portland, and we just didn't have it.
Well, in the end, I think the issue here gets back to which site we choose. I think the issue is moving ahead with building new facilities. We put forward a recommendation and are very
welcome
to have you all entertain a different site.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to take the prerogative of the chair. I know there are a lot of people angry in terms of what has been said. The sites have been chosen. Money has been plumped down on them, and I know we'd like to rehash that. But may I ask us to move on so we can do our job that we're supposed to be doing in here, because I know a lot of people are dissatisfied, including some people from Portland, because the Hillsborough site and those kind of things are not selected. So I'd like for us, if possible, to move on beyond this point, because we have a lot of other things to hear in this report.
Senator Gordley, thank you. Very prepared to move on, recognizing how we got to where we are. And with that said, I think it's also very important that we recognize that within our choice, there will be some very difficult challenges around recruitment of highly qualified physicians and other professional staff. We already know that the challenge exists with what we have now. But what that will require of all of us, is the smartest thinking, strategic thinking, planning, marketing, all of that. And we're all just going to have to give our best to get to where we want to go. But there will be challenges, and we need to acknowledge that out loud as well.
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, there are a lot of challenges. There's challenges in workforce recruitment. There are challenges in being certain we create the appropriate amount of front-end services to keep people out of the hospital. There's challenges in building the appropriate back-end to be certain. There are challenges in terms of staffing and creating the quality kinds of programming for our hospitals. There's no doubt. Our issue and our job is to be able to put together the appropriate plans to deal with all of those challenges in the best way that we can.
Thank you, Doc.
So we have, you can see in those, because I know time is of the essence. We go through each of those, the top two sites in each area, the rationale for choosing them. All of the information, the the scoring of the sites, the ranking, all of those things are certainly available for anybody to look at. And I'll conclude with what I said before, which is, in the end, the issue from, I think, and what I hope is our collective vision is that we have a great opportunity to recreate a mental health system. It's imperative, I believe, that we move forward with that now, that we build a, we have over 600 patients right now in a facility which is outdated and falling apart, and that we need to build a new hospital to get them into the appropriate place. If we don't start that process this legislative session, it will be moved back another 2 years. Where that hospital is, I think, is less important than the fact that we do that. And I think we have that opportunity, and I hope that from, I think, our standpoint, that we leave this legislative session with the funding and the plans to be able to build the appropriate facilities to meet the needs of our state out into the next couple of decades. If we don't do that now, it will be 126 instead of 124 years. And the time is now.
Further questions to Dr. Goldberg. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some questions related to something that was distributed this afternoon, the capital construction estimates.
Yeah.
Would this be the time to raise it or later?
What I wanted to do, if you don't mind, was if it's... can I say a small question? Because we're trying to not work on the budget piece as much as we are to explain this piece, but maybe Mr. Britton can answer if it's a short question.
What I'll do is I'll pose my questions now, and then perhaps the answers can come back when we're discussing it in detail. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I look at the construction estimates, it's a little hard for me to understand whether the impact of the choice of sites that the state already owns, what the impact of that is, because in three, we can get real excited and say, assume, well, we've just saved a bunch of money because we don't have to acquire new sites. However, in three or four other areas, I see small to large increases from the governor's recommended budget to what is now the updated recommended budget. And the reason it's hard for me to compare is I see in the updated recommendation, I see the costs expanded out through 2013-15. What I don't see is what those costs would have been expanded out from the governor's recommended budget. So I'm not able to compare those. So if we can have that detail then when we discuss this budget, I'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much. Further question?
Senator Carter, one issue about costs that I would also just point out is that there are two different costs. And in the last tab, there are costs about running the facility. And that the spreadsheet that you were looking at, Representative Nathanson, were the capital construction costs. And indeed, that's one of the costs in this. If you look at the costs as we move out into years into the future, what I think is imperative that the legislature understand is that the real costs of this are going to be in the staffing and operation of the facilities out into the future. The construction is funded with certificates of participation. There's a debt service payment every year. Those are amortized over a series of years, but it's moving from currently a hospital system that serves approximately 710 patients to one that's going to serve over 900 patients, and the ability to adequately staff and program that is where there are some significant budget impacts out into the next biennium. and I just didn't want there to be any illusion about that, and it's broken out. I believe it's tab... Tab 10, I think. The last page of your binder breaks out the construction as well as the operational costs.
Madam Chair? Representative Cortez. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Goldberg, since you brought up that preliminary budget estimate, one of the questions I've had in the back of my head is the staffing or the operational, is that based on what you think the buildings are going to look like, based on how we're staffing now? How are you anticipating what could essentially be a change in staffing structure at the different buildings? Is that in here?
In order to answer that question, can we have a changing of the guard? Dr. Goldberg has to leave, and the person that is on the line and doing the things that can answer your operational questions is Dr. Nichol.
So you're now free to ask all the difficult questions.
That's right.
Doctor,
I know you have to go. And so,
thank you so much.
Madam Chair.
Before you leave, Senator,
just
Westman.
Before you go, I, for one, I know these were difficult decisions in the locating of the major hospital buildings. I just think you and the governor's office and your entire staff, Bob, everyone did as good a job as humanly possible. I think you guys did very well. So I thank you for that. These are not easy decisions. And under the circumstances, you deserve to be complimented and commended.
Chair Carter, Senator Westland, thank you. I think we'll all feel good when we've got facilities up and going and we're getting people the care that they need.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, the staffing cost... Bob Nichol, Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services, and I'm responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. The staffing estimates that we have in the operational budget that you're looking at are based on two things, really. A different configuration of the buildings so that we have an architecturally sound and a reasonably sized set of living units for people. The KMD architects recommended 20 bed units at 85% capacity. We decided to base our staffing on 24 bed units at 85% capacity, which is in essence 20 person units. We currently have some units that are 43 patients on wards that were built for 35. To begin with, 35 bed wards are not state-of-the-art at all. They're not safe, they're not practical, they're not conducive to the best mental health treatment that we think we'd like to give people. So the staffing estimates, first of all, are based on smaller-sized units. We expanded, as I said, a little bit the capacity because it didn't make sense to us to run 85% capacity, which was what KMD recommended. We only have 17 patients on a unit. We think we can do just as well with 20. I mean, there's some economy of scale there, and I think we're comfortable with running 20 to 24 patients on wards. The second factor is simply the one that will probably become clearer and clearer as we go through the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act review, the CRIPA review, the Federal Department of Justice review that we're going through. We already know from looking at our comparison with other state hospitals around the country and what other federal requirements have been that we're considerably understaffed, no matter what the architecture is. So we're looking at several models right now. One that we're just beginning to talk about, and we'll share more about this as we get further into our thinking, is to think differently about how we do hospitals. Right now, patients receive all their treatment according to the residential unit that they live on. We know that other hospitals, and even to some degree Oregon's hospitals, have been using what is called a treatment mall approach, where you live and where you get your treatment are two different issues, so that you can live on one unit and receive most of your services somewhere in the treatment mall itself. So that if you need to move around for the residential portion of what you're needing, it doesn't have to change entirely your whole treatment team or your whole treatment regimen, and that has implications for staffing as well. So those are some of the service model issues that we're looking at, in addition to ward size and also what we know are likely to be increased expectations
expectations from the federal government.
Thank you.
Well, please proceed, sir. Members of the committee, what I would suggest is that at this point I just add a couple of pieces to what Dr. Goldberg shared with you. One is that I just want everybody to be clear that about two-thirds of our patients are forensic patients. The other portion are civilly committed patients. These are people who have not committed crimes but have been adjudicated to us still through the court process but through a civil commitment. These are people who are adults ages 18 to 65, and then we have geropsychiatric units, or we're also thinking about calling them neuropsychiatric units in recognition of the evolution of our thinking about a lot of the disorders that we're seeing, so that the civil commitment portion of the population is expected to continue to be about a third of the state hospital population. But two-thirds of the people we serve now and will continue to serve into the future are going to be people who have committed crimes and have been adjudicated guilty except for insanity, or have been sent to us by the courts again to be evaluated as to whether they're fit to proceed. We slip into acronyms and numbers on this one. So if you hear us talk about 370 admissions, that's the portion of the statute that allows for the courts and local jails to transfer people to us to treat until they're able to aid and assist in their own defense. The other piece that that I wanted to mention is the KMD projections were based on population growth in these areas. We looked in particular at the forensic population as being basically paralleling the criminal justice or Department of Correction projections. So if you wonder where some of the size and the numbers come from, that was part of it. The other piece of it was to reduce length of stay overall in all of the hospital units by 20%. That's a fairly significant length of stay reduction. And Dr. Goldberg mentioned the necessity of having front-end and back-end community services. We cannot achieve 20% reductions in length of stay without efficient movement of patients back to the community, and also to prevent as many admissions as we can. So those factors have already been taken into consideration to arrive at a 360-bed hospital toward the south. I hesitate to use the term southern facility anymore, and also the North Willamette area site. At this point, I think Dr. Goldberg covered the issues pretty thoroughly. I would look for any questions at this point or additional pieces that you'd like for us to put onto the record.
Any questions for Dr. Nickel?
Thank you. The continuing care piece of this is very interesting to me, and I don't know if I'm destroying your presentation here or not, so if this is going to come up at a later point, don't hesitate to push me off here, but I think that there is a huge clear need to replace the existing state hospital, and I think the other outstanding need in the system is for the 16-bed facilities in the communities, and I'm wondering where that is in the grand scheme of things, and when we're going to be moving on those kinds of projects.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, we've actually been moving on those kind of projects for about 12 to 14 years now. When we began to lead up to the closure of Damish State Hospital 11, 12 years ago, prior to that time, we were under considerable population increase issues. We were over census at Damish State Hospital as well as down here in Salem to some degree. And we began at that time the development of community projects, some of which were 16-bed locked secure facilities. Others were intensive 10 to 16-bed facilities. Some of them were 5-bed foster homes. And others were intensive outreach community support projects. So we've actually had quite a bit of experience. We've now, I forget the exact number, I think we have about 1,200 such placements. Many of them are beds and facilities, but some of them are highly supervised community outreach programs where people live independently but have a lot of staff coming in to check on them and monitor how they're doing. So the quick answer is we've already started a lot of those projects, but the KMD report projected that we'd need to add about another 1,000 beds like that into the next 10 to 15 years. Dr. Goldberg mentioned that we do have a Central and Eastern Oregon work group that's already gone quite a ways into this process, particularly Central Oregon, because Central Oregon, as you all know, is one of the very fastest growing areas in the state. What you probably don't have any way of knowing is that they've developed very few of these kind of beds in Central Oregon. Their hospitalization rate has been relatively low. They haven't been terribly aggressive about going after these kinds of projects, but they now want their share, which is great, because the population out there is growing. It will continue to expand. So Central Oregon has a fairly detailed report, and I believe we provided that to you. If we didn't, I'll make sure that you get the Central Oregon preliminary report, because they've done a very thorough job of assessing what the three counties out there, Cook, Jefferson, and Deschutes counties, will need into the future. I've begun talking with a couple of people from Southern Oregon now, legislators as well as staff, to make sure that we get a similar kind of planning process started in the next couple of months, so that we begin to build out in Southern Oregon what we need. Southern Oregon has actually stepped to the plate quite a bit. One of the first lot secure facilities was located at Hugo Hills outside Grants Pass. It's been a very good program for, I think, well over 10 years now. There are a couple of other lots facilities down there, and we know that we need to develop more in that way. The one point, though, that again I want to come back to and emphasize is that many of those projects are now going to be projects that need to be willing and able to take forensic patients, PSRB, Psychiatric Security Review Board patients. And so I think that's been more difficult to cite, and I think that we need to acknowledge that many of the projects will either be that exclusively or at least be able to take those kind of patients in addition to the civilly committed patients.
Let me ask another question. I apologize for this, because this is a big hole in my knowledge base. Does there exist some kind of a document that gauges the needs in different areas of the state for what kinds of beds and just kind of a master planning document?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, the Phase 2 report has some really gross numbers kind of approaches. It doesn't differentiate between forensic and civil commitment projects in the communities. In the Community Services Work Group report, which I issued on March 13th, we broke that down further using the same KMD projections for community bed needs. But in this one, I asked staff to split it off between civil projects and forensic projects. So I forget what page of that document that chart is in, but it's in that report. But I think the real point is we need to sit down with local communities and begin to do more detailed planning as soon as this session ends, or even a little bit before, if we can get started on it before then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we leave the topic of need and estimating what we need either in the community or in the state hospital system, a few minutes ago you mentioned about, for the state hospital system, about two-thirds criminal, one-third civil. You also explained to us that in planning the needs for the state hospital, that it, in the words I would use, it's sort of like a turnover rate. How long someone stays and at what point they go back to the community, and ensuring that treatment is appropriate, and there's a certain pattern that you can anticipate for how long someone will be there. That's once they're there. Something that I've heard more than once, in fact more than twice now, is a concern about who is it that's getting to you, who is being assigned, and how much influence or control you have over are all the people who are assigned either to the state hospitals or on the other side of the system into the criminal justice system, into prisons, let's say. Are those assignments appropriate, and are there any extenuating factors or what we might call budget drivers that cause courts to assign persons to one part of our system rather than another part? Is that predictable, and are you comfortable that it will stay predictable for you?
Madam Chair, let's say Nathanson. No, I'm not comfortable, but not because I would blame the courts or the jails or the local jurisdictions. They're doing the best they can with a lot of people who are coming their way that they really weren't prepared to handle. We have seen a lot of cuts in the state general fund to services that could keep those people out of the jails, out of emergency rooms, even out of prisons, and off the streets. We also, when we lost the Oregon Health Plan standard population, when it was so drastically reduced, it's clear in my talk with people in testimony this morning at an earlier hearing that those people are the folks who are recycling through, largely through the criminal justice system. So I think that the governor's recommended budget, for example, has several million dollars in it in the front-end services that would help divert people from jail programs, that would provide assertive community outreach programs to them, try to, frankly, scoop them up and engage them in treatment before they have to end up in emergency rooms, before they end up in the criminal justice system, before they end up homeless, before they end up costing other systems a great deal where they're really not prepared to serve them anyway. So I think, is it predictable? I think in a general sense, it's predictable. If we don't invest in front-end services, it's predictable we'll continue to set records for forensic admissions, just like I just learned earlier today that we've set records now for the what I call the 370 admissions, the patients that are sent to us for the state hospital to evaluate to see whether they're able to aid and assist in their own defense. We set a record for that last month. We're expecting to set an even bigger record. So in terms of if we invest in the front end, we can predictably reduce the number of people who have to come to the state hospital. And just as important, people end up in the criminal justice system.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob, I'm going to say some things, and I want you to respond to them by saying if I'm completely off target or not, okay? I'm probably the only person on this panel that has direct contact with what's going on here. And what we've got right now at the local level is a revolving door. A revolving door is the emergency room. Patient after patient comes in with mental health problems, a psychiatric break. We give them a week of medication, keep them overnight, maybe in the hospital, or if our ward 2 North is full, ship them somewhere else in the state if they have to be. They go out in the street, a month and a half later, they're back again. And I think that's repeated pretty well all over the state. I believe the plan we're looking at is fatally flawed. Fatally flawed. But that we have time to fix that flaw. And now is the time to do it, during this session, not afterwards. The fatal flaw is this. If we don't fix the local system, what I call the preload, we will build two massive hospitals, fill them up to where we're right back where we started from right now, and we'll be recycling people in and out of our ERs on the street until they commit a crime, and then they're placed in the prison system. So I'm asking that we think very strongly about what that fatal flaw is. That means multiple 16-bed units in various communities around the state where people can be stabilized either for a day or weeks. Those units would handle forensic patients also, would have to. The big cost of this is not the sites we're looking at, not the building of those buildings. It's an incredible cost of maintaining people in those buildings. And we get at least a partial match to the federal government in 16-bed facilities, which we do not get in the big box facilities. Those are significant financial numbers. The system we're devising here today is not going to work. When it falls apart 10 or 15 years from now, most of us won't be here. I don't plan to be here, by the way, folks, just so you know right now. If we don't do this, areas like Roseburg and Medford and the coast and eastern Oregon, places in Portland, even here in Salem, will fill these facilities up so fast you won't believe it, and the cost will be unbelievable. And I don't see something here in black and white that I can sign off on until that's done. Bob, if you'd like to respond to what I've said and disagree with me, feel free to.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I don't disagree with the concept that you're talking about. I work for the governor, and the governor's recommended budget has $10 million in it that would help with the front-end services, $4.4 million in it for expanding the East, the early assessment and support team projects, which get to kids hopefully the first or second time they have a psychotic episode and stop the entire cycle, because that's really, folks, what the answer to this is. There is one. So the question before you, I think, as a legislature is, are you at least in support of what the governor's recommended budget has in this area? And if you see a need to go beyond that, frankly, I don't think that's going to hurt anybody's feelings. But I have to, you know, obviously support the governor's recommended budget. I did issue the report, which suggests what we heard from people, and once we ran it through a financial and program model, said that the need is probably more like $106 million. And so, and I should also mention the governor's recommended budget also increases the number of Oregon Health Plan standard eligible people enough that that would also help with this process. So I think that that's, you know, essentially your job. The governor proposes and the legislature disposes, and I think airing the issues out is exactly what we need to be doing at this point. I have said from the beginning we cannot just build a new state hospital building.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This actually connects well with what Dr. Bates was saying. I'm still trying to get my head around, and thank you for referring to the community back-end services and the community services work group gets to the how many forensic and civil beds we need, pages 29 and 30. And I think I've asked you this in a previous hearing around why aren't we using certificate of participation for, you know, helping move along the cost of building the 16-bed facilities. I'm concerned that it's going to be difficult to build forensic beds in other communities without some public push, whether that's, you know, no-interest bonds or something, to physically build something. And I don't, am I missing something here? I mean, we talk a lot about what we need to do on the other side of the mountains in other parts of the state with smaller facilities, but we're not talking about how we're going to help that. I'm not clear how that's going to happen without some resources from us.
Madam Chair, but I should also mention the governor's recommended budget does include some certificate of participation authorization so that we can build some limited number of 16-bed facilities with that kind of funding. We've looked carefully at the statute, though. Unless the state operates these facilities, we can't use certificates of participation. At least that's my understanding. There's an exception, I think, for juvenile facilities. But essentially, if we're going to use another funding mechanism to get these projects up and going in terms of, you know, buying land and designing building, then COPs are only helpful if we're going to actually operate them with state employees. And I think there's a place for state-operated facilities in mental health. We haven't taken that step as the developmental disability system has yet, but we're prepared to do that. There are certain populations that I think are probably best served by state-operated facilities. That's, I'm sure reasonable people could disagree with that, but I think that there is a place for state-operated programs. For example, we have a number of people who have developmental disabilities or almost developmental disabilities in terms of their IQ and functioning level. They're very low functioning. They have sex offender problems in addition to a mental illness. Those three diagnoses are very difficult. They'll probably require some degree of locked facility for many, many years, but those could be done in more community-based facilities, just as we've done in the DD field. So I think there is a place for that, and I'm, you know, looking at those opportunities.
Thank you. Well, that just made me think about all the discussion around the Eastern Oregon Training Center. Now, that's a different population, but there's a lot of interest in the developmental disability community of moving the folks in that facility into community-based care. Is that a facility we can look at to convert? I don't know anything about the structure of that facility.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, we actually operate a mental health facility in one of the buildings across the street there at the training center. So, yes, we have actually looked at that, and we've looked at what the possibilities might be. I mean, since that's still under consideration, whether it's going to close as a train center or not, I can't speak very definitively at this point. But if it were to close at some point in the future, there are opportunities there. And I've had actually some staffing estimates made, and I'm asking for some more costs of what, you know, in the future, what it might take to harden the facilities, put fences up if we were to move them. The one thing that I've been real clear with the Pendleton community about is that the intensity of staffing and mental health for the same population of people is not going to probably equal or even come close to what the current staffing is at the training center. So I don't want people to start thinking that we can replace all 189 staff if we were to move that direction in the future.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
Thank you, and then I'll be quiet for a while. But I guess one of the things I'm still concerned about is we talk about the need for these smaller facilities, especially now that we're looking at the southern, we're putting Junction City and not, say, Medford Ashland for the second site. I understand that decision. I'm not seeing a parallel track discussion in the near future on getting those 16-bed facilities in either in southern Oregon or eastern Oregon. Am I missing something? I'm not, you know, there's references to doing it. You've mentioned that there's some, I don't know, where are the budget proposals for this coming biennium to get that started as we get started with the other two facilities?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, we probably should have talked earlier about this, but in the essential budget level, there's a factor called caseload growth, and it's built in to project a certain increase in the number of civilly committed people and the number of criminally committed people and the number of additional placements in the community we would be building as a result of that in the 07-09 budget. So there's in our base budget that you're considering sufficient funds in that area to do 150 new placements for people who are civilly committed and leaving the state hospital and 50 people in the psychiatric security review board. And it's that set of funds that we will have to work with if you pass the budget as the governor's recommended budget has it. Just this morning, I've begun to talk with a couple of legislators from Southern Oregon about forming a work group here fairly soon between, you know, community providers, legislators, if they're interested in being involved, and the community mental health program. So I anticipate in the next weeks we'll probably begin to have our first serious discussions about Southern Oregon.
Last one. Okay, I get the caseload growth issue, okay. But are there physically places to put 50 people? That's what it's not clear to me. Do we have contracted physical spaces? So let's say we get the caseload growth. That's what's not clear to me. Do we actually have the places to put people?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, not at the moment, but that's what our development team does every day, is help develop those kind of sites, bring in willing providers who are able to help, and we help put together funding packages for the startup and for the facility development, and we've been doing that for quite a few years, and we would use that same basic process to find places to put people.
Okay, thank you.
All good questions.
Bob.
Madam Chair, I don't know.
I'm Ms. Senator Gordney. That's right. Senator Gordney.
Thank you very much. I love Representative Kotek's questions and enthusiasm. I just want to say that. Dr. Bates, before he left, was expressing concern and questions about front-end services. And Dr. Nickel, that has led you to make several references to the governor's recommended budget. However, the budget that is now in play, so to speak, is the co-chair's budget, and I'd like to hear some frank reflection on your part about where are the differences.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we're still trying to understand some of the detail in the co-chair's budget. And we see some numbers and some titles there, but we're not sure yet what's within them. There's one big category that has $9.6 million. I think it starts off saying community and state hospital master plan. There's a big chunk of money there that I don't understand enough about to know. But overall, when I've looked at this, the co-chair's budget appears to add $21.5 million to the essential budget level. The governor's recommended budget probably in the same, if you add in addictions and mental health, is probably more in the $30 million range. So my initial assessment, and I could be wrong once I learn more about the detail, is that it looks like it's, the co-chair's budget to me looks like about $10 million less for addictions and mental health. But again, I don't have enough detail within that to give me real definitive statements.
And for a follow-up, what information, what detail, what do you need in order to be able to make that assessment, which will also help us make the assessment we need to make on this end? I'm feeling some frustration myself about the lack of detail. What do you need? That we also
Madam need. Chair, Senator Gourley, I probably need the same thing you're expressing a need for, and hopefully we'll find a mechanism to get that.
Is that conversation taking place someplace outside of this hearing?
Madam Chair, Senator Gourley, I would have to check with the governor's office to see, and with Dr. Goldberg, to see if they have begun to have discussions about that. Not any that I've been involved in yet, but it may be that there are discussions that are going to be starting. That I would, frankly, would welcome that as much as you would.
Okay. It's just all too vague at this point. Too vague.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the last thing that I would like to do, just since performance measures are critical in the work that you're doing, if you look at the policy option package 104-46, and I'm sorry, I'm not sure if all of the detail is in your folder or not. I know I had it in some backup material.
Is that in our big book?
Well, when I looked for it, I was having a hard time finding it. Maybe somebody can help me.
There's 45. The regular book is on page.
Okay.
Members, it's not in this one. It is in the one that, yes, it's in this one right here.
Which tab? It's on page
43. Isn't it
the addendum that includes? It's under capital construction, addendum 1.
Then, members, it is under this that we was handed out to you earlier.
It's under the capital construction.
It should be, yeah. Is that right, Bob?
Madam Chair, yes. Mr. Britton, I guess people are nodding. It didn't end up in the particular version of the folder that I got, so that's why I'm a little confused.
We'll start over.
104-46, is that the one you're in?
It's in two places. It is in this that was handed out to you today.
This one. We just got today.
Capital construction and capital construction addendum, addenda 1.
It's a permutation of the one and the other binder.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my document says page, I think, 31. I think it's a 36-page, or at least it went up to number 36, and it was referred to earlier in the discussion with Dr. Goldberg, I believe.
What's the option package 104-46?
46, I believe.
104-46. We have it as page 44 under the tab that's marked capital construction.
Clarification? Has this changed, though, Mr. Britton? He gave us new numbers. Is this?
Representative Kotek, I gave you what the department gave me to hand out to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it does have some new numbers updated, as we talked about a little bit earlier. In the document that has numbers like 31, 32, 33 on the bottom, I think you just received those today. If you look on page 31, the performance measures, the facility replacement itself is pretty self-evident. We will know if we've successfully completed this when we go through the various design and construction phases on the schedule that we've laid out. And we also mentioned that there will be no great misunderstanding by stakeholders or reduced accountability by my division. Those are the key performance measures there. So the data system for the new facility is one that would allow us to keep up to the standards.
Can we just interrupt you for a minute?
Sorry, Bob. We're not on the same page here. It sounds like you're referring to this.
Yes.
Okay.
We handed this out earlier as well. It looks like this. Yes. And we're on page, Bob, we're on page 31.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now we got it.
Okay. All right. I apologize for confusion here. Very large kind of. So, again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you look there, you'll see the under performance measures, facilities replacement. I just talked a little bit about that. And then the data system for the new facility. Because we're really trying to rethink how we do state hospital services, it's critical that not only to meet Joint Commission standards, which every time they've reviewed us recently, they have been very concerned that we lack a modern, flexible, usable data system that integrates patient records, community services, pharmacy, all of the things that it takes to run an integrated hospital and community system. We lack that right now. We're working off an old, I believe it's an old mainframe system, probably designed by IBM 25 years ago. It's got an amazing data set within it, but it's totally inflexible, and it doesn't allow for any real integration with community programs and their records and our state hospital records. It's not very well integrated even within the hospital itself, and that's the reason why we think that the time to fix this is during the construction of a new state hospital system.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. I would like to ask a question about that. I think it's been just a week now ago since we heard from a nursing services manager about workload and caseload problems and nurses spending, psychiatric nurses spending quite a bit of time not doing what they and they only can do, which is psychiatric nursing, but all sorts of things such as stocking supplies and also manually filling out paperwork. And that's one of the reasons why I asked the question last week about data system replacement. A new hospital is years away. I'm having trouble understanding why we need to wait so long with data system replacement if it could help address workload and service and cost issues sooner. Because a data system, unless this is completely different than what I'm understanding from your words today, a data system can be unplugged and moved to a new building, to put it in simple terms.
Madam Chair, Representative Nickinson, we've actually been, I think, for over a year beginning the design process for what a better data system would look like. And we're trying to do this the right way and thinking ahead of the game, which is think about doing this in a way that can interface with the community as well as the state hospital. One of the fundamental concepts in all of this is the state hospital should not be an island. It should not be set apart from the community. But we then need to think very carefully about how we design a system that would interface with the complexities at the local level with the complexities and the different kinds of needs in a state hospital. So we've had a planning group that's been working on this already. The project has been known as BHIP, and I think it's Behavioral Health Information Program. We're going to rename that, as I understand it, to call it the Hospital Management Information and Patient Outcome Monitoring Program.
That's not nearly as fun.
We like it if you don't rename it. We like the first name.
Well, the naming in part is a reflection that we need to do this in preparation for the new state hospital and would allow us to use certificates of participation to help fund it if it's directly related to the new state hospital, rather than funding it all with funds that are scarce and often difficult to coordinate together. So, I've got a list here of 10 high-level business functions that it would perform. Let me just read them to you. Pharmacy and medications management, admit, transfer, discharge, patient care and services, electronic medical record, medical services, laboratory services, nutrition, dietary services, utilization review, quality improvement, all of those kind of administration and finance, facilities management, plant maintenance and reporting. And I can get a list to you if you'd like to have this. I've just received this today because we anticipated that there would be some additional questions, and rightly so, about how we would do this process and why we anticipate building this into the new state hospital system.
Madam Chair?
Thank you. And thank you, Bob, for the clarification. I can understand wanting to stick it in with the hospital because we have the COP funding available. So I'm looking at this chart. So we're all said and done. We're looking at over $27 million for the new data system. Am I reading that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, I'm trying to find it here. I've lost it in the shuffle, but I believe that's right. We have people who can speak in more detail to how we got to those kind of budget numbers, and I'd be happy to
I think
if the chair wants to have additional detail.
I'm not sure. I don't know if I need that much info. I just want to make 2 points. In Human Services Committee, we heard a presentation on the shift to off-the-shelf products. I'm assuming that's what this is. This is not a creation of another legacy system, right? This is going to be an off-the-shelf product. I see heads nodding. And how are we going to interface this with the community partners? Will there be dollars available for the community? And I'm not just thinking the nonprofit people, but law enforcement? Because the goal is not to be an island. So I'm assuming an off-the-shelf product would make that easier to accomplish.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, yes, looking at it, whatever is off-the-shelf that can meet these particular business demands. The issue of whether we can interface with law enforcement is a much thornier issue, as you know, and HIPAA as well as state confidentiality regulations are important considerations. I know I'm going to be testifying tomorrow night down in Albany about a couple of bills that speak to this issue, so we'll have a chance for more discussion about, the complexities of doing that. There are certainly some issues where we simply can't release without authorization protected medical information to law enforcement, so particularly with HIPAA in the picture. So there are issues there that we need to talk about. And how we will involve the community programs, that's a critical question, and we will involve them in this process as we move forward.
Thank you.
Senator Borsha. Madam Chair, thank you. I would urge you to take a look at the reorganization of the system that Bobby Mink undertook about 4 or 5 years ago,
right,
which was a grand idea to coordinate all of the services in the community to interface with each other and with, kind of like you're talking about. I'm kind of interested if that really came to fruition, if it really works, but, we keep circling back, and this is a different kind of a system, but I'm sure you can learn a lot from whatever happened to that system.
Thank you. I think that was probably the DHS Integrated Client Database that you're referring to, and I know that we've made some headway on that. I could not give you a real clear update right now off the top of my head about where that's at. I will say this, that a hospital database is much more clinically focused
and would
be a much more complex operation than being able to track where people are in different parts of the department, but it's certainly something that we have looked at and will continue to just.
Last question from Senator Wesley.
Sure, some dates?
No, we're
running
out of time.
All right.
Just go
with
your questions.
Now, I want to tag on just a little bit on what Representative Kotek was saying. First of all, I know I speak for the entire committee when I say that we insist that the effort remain named BHIP. I mean, we're not going to put up with one of these other long acronyms. The issue, Bob, and I struggle with this, not just, with the state hospital or certain segments of adult and family services or TANF, is this IT component that we all seem to struggle with so much. I mean, I just don't get it. We've got private companies out there, 75,000 employees that are self-insured, that monitor all of their own, medical records, claims processing, incredible amounts of data, and more than that, they subcontract for other companies, and they all do it out of a little office about as big as this hearing room, out of servers that take up less room than that witness stand. I mean, granted, I'm not the obviously computer nerd type of guy, but the
Well, I just don't understand why this state, not just you, I'm not just picking on you, has so much difficulty coming to terms with something that private industry embraces, not just because of the cost effectiveness of it, but because it better serves the company's needs and their customers and clients. I don't get it. I mean, I'm getting tired of hearing this continual, well, we got to do this, or we're different because... Anyway, that's my soapbox. I love you. I'm sorry I vented, but it just, you know, sometimes this stuff's got to stop.
Madam Chair, Senator Westland, I'm not a computer nerd either.
Yeah, I can tell by the great way you look, you know.
But I, you know, it may be something that the committee would like to hear a little bit more detail about at some point, and we'd be happy to do that.
Then we'll hear, truly this is the last question, it's 2:35. We'll hear from Representative Lathanson, but let me say this. Let me say this, like Senator Westland should remember Y2K. Now, I haven't said anything to anybody else here because these people all knew they need to get questions out. Senator Westland?
I'm too young to remember Y2K.
To every three legislators that are here, five of them have different views from their business community in terms of how things should be run, what mechanisms we should be used, what kind of using, what kind of technology should be used. And so these guys travel like a snail because they can't satisfy all you individual legislators, for one thing. And so you know the state government moved fast. I don't know why, Senator Westland, you want to come up with that. They got 90 different legislators to answer to, and every last one of them but Margaret Carter, so we got 89, want to tell you how to develop your system. That's what the problem is, Representative Nathanson, then we're going home.
No, Margaret Carter just stood up on the record and said, I'm for slow, ponderous, cumbersome IT systems. Okay, all right, Gordon.
Madam Chair, let it be known that the House ignores Senator Westland.
Thank you. Well, I'd like something from a numbers nerd rather than an IT nerd. If someone could tell us at a subsequent time on the information system, if we had found the money to do it and do it now, what would it have cost versus borrowing the money and paying it off through certificates of participation?
Okay. Bobby, ask that when you come back.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Representative Atkinson will work on the answer to that.
Okay. Any other dying questions? We're dead. Have a good day.